translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jaya. He was there in His transcendental body, the residence of the Goddess of Fortune, with His usual gentle and sweetly smiling face, His nectarian words, and His flawless character. Purport. In the previous verse, it is described that Lord Krishna, being situated in the truths of Sankhya philosophy, is detached from all kinds of matter. In the present verse, it is described that He is the residence of the Goddess of Fortune. These two things are not at all contradictory. Lord Krishna is detached from the variegatedness of the inferior nature, but He is in eternal blissful enjoyment of the spiritual nature, or His internal potency. One who has a poor fund of knowledge cannot understand this distinction between the external and internal potencies. In Bhagavad Gita, the internal potency is described as the para prakriti. In the Vishnu Purana also, the internal potency of Vishnu is described as para shakti. The Lord is never detached from the association of para shakti. This Parashakti and her manifestations are described in the Brahma Samhita 5.37 as Ananda Chinmaya Rasa Pratibhavitabhi. The Lord is eternally joyful and cognizant in the taste derived from such transcendental bliss. Negation of the variegatedness of the inferior energy does not necessitate negation of the positive transcendental bliss of the spiritual world. I wonder if somebody who wasn't familiar with Krishna consciousness, how they'd understand that sentence, probably be like, negation of the variegatedness, I'm just reading it again, negation of the variegatedness of the inferior energy does not necessitate negation of the positive transcendental bliss of the spiritual world. For us it's totally normal, right? But for a non-devotee it would be, what language are they speaking? Therefore the Lord's gentleness, His smile, His character, and everything related to Him are all transcendental. Such manifestations of the internal potency are the reality, of which the material shadow is only a temporary representation, from which everyone with proper knowledge must be detached. Om Jnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurnamilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shrivasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So in this verse we're continuing with Uddhava's relaying of Krishna's pastimes that are not in Vrindavan. And he's mentioning Krishna in Dwarka here. And the main point that's being brought up is that in the previous verse, it was relayed how Krishna was living according to the Vedic customs. He was situated in detachment and knowledge as recommended by the Sankhya system of philosophy. So Krishna was doing everything properly, following all the religious principles, following the scriptures. And then in this verse, it's saying that he's the residence of the Goddess of Fortune. And Srila Prabhupada is elaborating upon that in the purport and saying that some people may misunderstand this, that they may think, okay, there's a God, He's in control of everything, He's pure, He's moral, so how can it be that He has a wife, or in this instance, 16,108 wives? How can that be? There must be, that's some kind of contradiction, and that's some kind of problem in the Krishna conscious philosophy. And Srila Prabhupada goes into describing that and resolving that in the purport. So understanding Krishna is not very easy. Understanding Krishna is not very simple. For us it may seem simple, We just accept that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We should chant his names. We should wear a dhoti. We should worship the deity. All of these things for us, it's totally, what else would I do, you know? This is what I do. But for many, many people, this is totally bizarre. And there's various logical reasons why they may think that this is incorrect or not the right thing to do. So it's important to understand this, because when we present Krishna consciousness to other people, then we have to deal with those barriers. And later we'll talk about also that those barriers are still also within us, but especially in terms of presenting Krishna consciousness to others. So some people may, when they hear about Krishna, they may have objections straight away that how can you say that a particular person is God? There's a God, he may be, you know, everything, he's conveniently somewhere distant, so he doesn't interfere with my life too much, but he's set down his rules in scripture that we have to follow. But when you say that somebody specific who was born in this world, who died, who did so many different types of things, how can you say that that person is God? Many people will have many objections to that. And when we describe Krishna's activities to them, because we've got tons of activities, right? This whole chapter, I don't know how long it is, but 40, 50 verses. It's just describing different things that Krishna has done, as was the previous chapter. And this is just the beginning of Bhagavatam. We have the whole Bhagavatam describing Krishna's incarnations, what to speak of the 10th canto, which is half of the Bhagavatam, talking about Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan and outside of Vrindavan. So when we talk about what Krishna does, according to our philosophy, everything that Krishna does is totally transcendental. But people wouldn't necessarily accept that. First thing, they wouldn't understand what transcendental means. So we'd have to explain what is spiritual and what is material. But maybe in their language, we could say they would not believe that it's pure, that what Krishna does is pure. How can it be pure that Krishna is, that has a wife, or has 16,108 wives? How can it be pure that Krishna is running away on the battlefield from Kaliyavana, right? How can it be Krishna is running away on the battlefield? How can it be pure that Krishna is breaking his promise, picking up a chariot wheel to fight with Karna when Arjuna is in trouble? How can it be pure that Krishna is dancing with other people's wives in the middle of the night? How can that be pure? How can it be pure that Krishna is killing people? People are, although there's so many wars going on right now, and there's probably going to be more, people are so against violence. They wouldn't like to hear that. Krishna is, I think I've said before in class, one time I brought my dad and my stepmother to a temple in Soho. They're probably going to listen to this class later. My stepmother came up to the temple room and she liked everything, thought it was all very nice. But she said, the only thing I don't like is Nrsingadev, the picture of Nrsingadev, the pools of blood on the floor and the person being bifurcated and having his intestines removed and the half man, half lion decorating himself with the intestines. So people don't generally like violence. But Krishna doesn't have so much of a problem with it. Krishna gets into a little bit of violence now and again, but and beheading people. Anyway, there's quite a lot of violence going on. One time I was distributing books on Covent Garden, and I was distributing Krishna books to mothers so that they could read them to their children. I said, you should read this, lots of nice stories, it's spiritual. So one lady, she bought a Krishna book and then she came back later and she was complaining that it's so violent. I was saying young children love violence, especially young boys. They're not going to read it in Krishna book, they're going to read it somewhere else. They're so into like fighting, killing other people. So you should be happy this violence is transcendental. But people find it difficult to understand Krishna. How is it that these things are spiritual? How is it that these things are pure? And Especially, it can be a problem, Krishna's relationship with the opposite sex. That's going a bit far, right? Okay, yeah, God, I can believe in God. You know, I can go to church every Christmas. You know, I can fit that into my schedule. But God having a relationship with the opposite sex, I mean, that's like, you know, that's going a bit too far. Of course, I have my wife, you know, I had my girlfriends before I got married, and, you know, I think she's quite attractive as well, and so is she. But God and that, no, that's like totally incompatible. That is not acceptable, whether it's his girlfriends or whether it's his wives. So that really confuses people, upsets people. But there's lots of different misunderstandings that people have. There's another, someone can clarify with me. I'm not sure exactly who it is. I think they're also, yeah, they must be in our Sampradaya as well. Some groups don't accept Brahma Vimohan Leela. Do you know who it is exactly? Madhvacharyas. So they don't accept Brahma Vimohan Leela, which we accept. It's in Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? How can you not accept it? It's right there in Bhagavatam. Vyasadeva spoken. It's part of, it's an integral part of Srimad Bhagavatam. They didn't accept that. How can it be that Brahma was contaminated and he didn't accept that Krishna was God and Krishna had to humble him, Krishna had to put him in his place? So what to speak of materialists, what to speak of atheists, what to speak of other religions, even some people within our own sampradaya, they get confused by Krishna. What to speak of some people within our sampradaya, even the head of our sampradaya gets confused by Krishna, right? Brahma is thinking, who's this little boy in Vrindavan being muchi, taking other people's food, eating with his left hand, you know, putting his food in their mouth, taking food from their mouth, putting it in his mouth. How can he be God? So even Lord Brahma, who is omniscient on the material platform, he gets confused what to speak of others. I mentioned that other religions, they also have this issue. And this is not a small thing. We're talking about millions and millions of people or billions of people on this planet who are seriously religious. We were preaching in Turkey before when I was living in Hungary. And Turkey is kind of the gateway into the Middle East, but it's still European. But it's an interesting mixture. There's a lot of mosques there. People are seriously Muslim, although the ladies, you know, have their hair down and stuff. They're quite Western, but still, it's a Muslim country. I asked my spiritual master once when we were there in the airport, that what benefit do they get for their religious activities, because they are seriously religious. Three times a day you hear the tannoys from the mosque going off in Istanbul, and everybody goes to the mosques, or some people go to the mosques. And he said they'll get eternal benefit for the religious activities that they're performing when they're worshipping Allah or worshipping God, but they'll also get the reactions for their sinful activities. But one is eternal, one is temporary, so it does outweigh the other, their religious activities. But if you were to say to a Muslim that Allah is a person, Allah has a body, then they would have some serious objections. If you go to a Christian and say God is a person, that may not be so much of a problem, but if you say he has various activities, and then describe that our scripture describes that they're like that, then they will also have some objections. And it's quite convenient, right? God is there. We have the conception of God. And I'm talking about in the Christian faith. We have a conception of God. He's there. You know, he gives you some security. He gives you some rules and regulations to live by. He gives you a nice abode that you can aspire to, but he's also not too in your face, you know. He's kind of like your next door neighbor, you know. He's there, he cuts his grass, He keeps it nice and tidy, but he doesn't, you know, you don't have to deal with him too much. He's not coming around knocking on your door, talking to you, asking how you are, telling you what to do. You know, they're keeping like a nice comfortable distance between them and God. But when we get into God's private life, into God's personal life, then that can be an issue, that can create problems. And it can also create problems for us as well. That's why we read Bhagavad Gita, we read Srimad Bhagavatam, we read Chaitanya Charitamrita, although that's also graded according to how senior a devotee is, or how advanced they are, or what books they've already read. But if we're talking about other books like Gita Govinda or Govinda Lilamrita, then we don't generally read those books unless someone is, you know, advanced devotee, they have permission from their spiritual master, because that can also confuse us. So Krishna is difficult to understand. It does go in steps. And Srila Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita that one only after many penances and sacrifices can one accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's not an easy thing to do. So other people do worship God, other people do worship Krishna, but it is all within the three modes of material nature. There's lots of distinction to be made. Somebody may accept God and use that as a tool, as a political tool, to wipe out nations, to wipe out races, to overtake land. This is their justification to do that. Other people may be worshipping God in the mode of passion. I mean, that's also mixed passion and ignorance, but in the mode of passion to gain various things. We see that most people do that. Also, it's also within our hearts that we don't come to Krishna consciousness in the mood of pure devotional service, that I'm joining the temple or I'm beginning to chant Hare Krishna just because I want to give pleasure to Krishna. Usually we're burning from the pangs of the material world and we want relief from that. And when we get a little bit more purified, then we want some comfort, we want some happiness, we want some enjoyment. That's devotional service in the mode of passion. So many, many people, the vast majority of people in this world, are worshipping God in the mode of passion. I was just listening to a morning walk from Prabhupada yesterday, and he was saying how people use Krishna as their order supplier. God, give us our daily bread. Say, God, give me this. God, give me that. God, you're my servant. God, you're my waiter. You know, come here, I have a list. I want this. Go get it for me. That's how people generally deal with God. And also, we are also dealing with God in that way, unless we're totally pure devotees who are totally surrendered, and we don't mind doing anything for Krishna at any given moment. Then we also have those things within our heart. So Prabhupada's saying here, one who has a poor fund of knowledge cannot understand this distinction between the external and internal potencies. He's saying that people misunderstand Krishna to be contaminated by the modes of material nature. They think that when he's having a relationship with his wives, or whatever activity it may be, that that is not pure, it's not transcendental. They don't understand that Krishna is acting within the internal potency. They can't make that distinction. If they think that anything in relationship to Krishna is impure, then they're not understanding that Krishna is acting within his internal potency. Just as we understand, okay, Krishna is dancing with the gopis in the middle of the night, but is that a moral problem, actually? Is that wrong? No? Why is it not wrong that Krishna's breaking moral codes, dancing with somebody else's wife in the middle of the night? Why isn't that wrong? Mm-hmm. They're made of spiritual potency. Yeah, Krishna's dancing with his own potency. That's right. So it's not that they're not somebody else's wives, right? That's actually a misconception. Everything is Krishna's energy. Nothing belongs to anybody else other than to Krishna. So if we're thinking that, if we're not understanding that everything is Krishna's or Krishna's internal potency, Krishna's spiritual energy, then we will misunderstand it. So what is material and what is spiritual? Except for Radha Mohan Prabhu and Govinda Prabhu, I know you know all the answers. And you as well, Tikaram Prabhu, you're also banned. Yeah. But is this material world temporary? It is. In the sense that there's creation, there's annihilation, that's temporary, right? And what happens to the elements? Do they just disappear at the end of the creation into nothingness? They become unmanifest. They become unmanifest. Where do they go? Vishnu. So then that material energy just disappears and then we have Vishnu. It goes inside him. And then it comes back out again. So it's not destroyed then. But then it's not. So is it temporary or it just changes the way that it's manifest? But doesn't, what does it say in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita that karma is eternal, right? Doesn't it say? Doesn't it say that? The five different elements. Karma can be... I'm not talking about things changing. He said it. And the material energy is temporary and the spiritual energy is eternal. Actually, the definition, the distinction to be made between material and spiritual is our consciousness. Everything is Krishna's energy. Everything can be engaged in Krishna's service. I was just listening to Prabhupada yesterday. He was saying that the devotees were talking about matter and spirit. And Krishna is saying, well, how do you see it? Prabhupada said, everything is made up of atoms. And he said, but then every single atom is Krishna. It's Kshuradakshaya Vishnu. So how can you say it's matter? How can you say it's material? Actually, everything is spiritual. Everything is Krishna's energy. Nothing is contaminated. It's all Krishna's. It's all Krishna. How can it be contaminated? But when we don't see that connection with Krishna, our illusion, that's material consciousness. That's material. We have, if I give you £500, and I'm not going to, if I were to give you £500, if I could afford it, you could go down to McDonald's and, you know, eat in McDonald's just on the corner for probably 3 years, it's so cheap in McDonald's. Or you could give a nice donation to Radha Gokulananda, right? The notes are the same. The value is the same. And how are you using it? So the distinction between matter and spirit is actually how are we engaging it? How are we seeing that? Actually, everything is Krishna. Everything is Krishna's energy. It's illusion to think that something is not connected to Krishna. So people with a poor fund of knowledge, as Prabhupada is saying, cannot understand the distinction between the external and the internal potencies. And they think that Krishna is made of the material energy. That's what Mayavadis are. They think Krishna is Maya. They don't understand that everything that Krishna does is totally pure and transcendental. And the reason people have these misconceptions is they have this anthropomorphic misconception of Krishna. They think, you know, I have my life, I have my wife, I have my money, I have my car. If there's somebody spiritual, say there's a priest in the temple, you know, he shouldn't have any money, he shouldn't have a car, he shouldn't have a wife, he should be spiritual. And if there's God, you know, he can't, you know, he's pure, he's spiritual, he's transcendental, he doesn't need a wife or these things. That's wrong. For us, it's totally natural. Krishna's got a wife, what to speak of a wife, he's got the gopis. But for people, this is a real obstacle, this is a real problem. And the problem is because they're attached to that thing. Their attachment to the opposite sex or their material objects covers their consciousness. And because they think they have an inherent right to that, and that they're the enjoyer and they're the controller, then they can't understand that actually it's me who's wrong. It's me who doesn't actually own any of those things. It's me who actually, I don't really, I mean, you do have a right to those things in one sense, but we don't own them. They don't belong to me. It's all Krishna's energy. And it's all based on this wrong conception that I'm this body. So only when one becomes pure of those attachments, only when that knot in the heart is unraveled, is gradually untied, then you can understand that it's Krishna actually who should have the wives. It's Krishna who should have the lovers. It's Krishna who should be rich. It's Krishna who should have all the facilities. And I should be facilitating that. Keshava Bharati Maharaj said once that the closer that you come to Krishna, the greater that you realize he is, and the smaller that you realize you are. Like with the sun. So it's a rare sight in England, but yesterday I did see it's for a few seconds some kind of glowing circle in the sky, and then the clouds covered it again. But the sun, we see it looks like, you know, size of a 5 pence piece. If you travel, I don't know how many millions of miles is it to the sun, Radha Mohan Puri?
About 93 on average.
93 million miles. Okay. So if you travel like, you know, a bit closer to the sun, a few million miles, then you'll realize how much greater it is, how much bigger it is, right? How much hotter it is. The closer you get, the more powerful it is. So Keshava Bharati Maharaj is saying with Krishna, in the same way, the closer you become to Krishna, the closer you get, the smaller you realize that you are in relationship to Krishna, and the bigger that you realize he is, the more humble you become. And as we become more humble, then we realize how great Krishna is. So we do inherently base things on our own conceptions, which is anthropomorphic, but it's impossible to understand Krishna like that. The whole way that people approach things in this world is through logic and their own direct perception, pratyaksha. But when it comes to Krishna, then it fails. It's not going to get you there. Just like, say we've never met devotees before, right? And somebody says to you, okay, give me a conception of God. Okay, we'd say like, okay, he's pure, he's all-knowing, he's all good. Okay, that's pretty obvious, that's pretty logical. Okay, so now tell me, what does he look like? I mean, kind of a logical understanding of it is that he's old and he's got a beard, right? That kind of makes sense because he's like been around a long time. And if somebody said, okay, what kind of clothes should you wear to worship God? I mean, at least me coming from a Western conception, I would never have thought of a dhoti or a tilak or a sikha. Just, you can't work it out material on the material platform, right? It doesn't make sense. How would you work out from extrapolation, from material logic, that Krishna is blue, or that he's looking after cows? And maybe from India they would understand cows are important and need to be protected, but you wouldn't be able to get it. You wouldn't be able to work it out. You wouldn't understand that there's billions of Vaikuntha planets and that there's a Matsya incarnation of Krishna. You can't, on the basis of research and on the basis of collecting data, figure out that Krishna is a blue cowherd boy and he's dancing around in Goloka Vrindavan. You wouldn't be able to work it out. The only way that you can understand it is by hearing from Krishna, by hearing from his representatives, accepting that knowledge that Krishna is giving through the Vedas. That's the only way to develop that understanding and to approach Krishna. And even then, when we hear about Krishna, still he's very difficult to understand. Extremely difficult to understand. I mentioned in the last class I gave, which was on this chapter, it's a similar topic, that even when Krishna left this world, he leaves a material body, right? Just to confuse people. If he's not confusing enough already, I also mentioned in the last class that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he read Srimad Bhagavatam, he couldn't accept that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because he seemed immoral. It was only when he came across Chaitanya Charitamrita that he could see it in its proper context and see the perfect example of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and then accept Krishna. So understanding Krishna is very difficult, and that's proven in various ways. When Krishna is here on earth, Prabhupada says that only a handful of people understood that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What to speak of us? You know, we're here in the middle of nowhere, called Lechmore Heath, and we're trying to understand Krishna. When Krishna was personally here, he comes once in the day of Brahma, when he's performing his activities, when he's displaying his lila on this earth, nobody can understand who he was. Prabhupada said a handful of people could understand who Krishna was. He's so difficult to understand. Also, we have the example of Mahatma Gandhi. So he would read Bhagavad Gita. I believe he died with the Bhagavad Gita in his hand. He would always have the Bhagavad Gita with him. Shishi Radhagokulananda Ki Jai. But also, he didn't understand who Krishna was. Actually, he said that he doesn't even believe that there was a historical personality called Krishna. So, although he read the Bhagavad Gita, although he was dedicated to India and to, you know, somewhat some parts of the Vedic culture, he didn't even understand, he didn't even think Krishna existed at any time. What to speak of understanding that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, to be clear on these things, to understand that Krishna, to understand Krishna's position, to whatever extent we are able to understand it, we have to hear from the Vedic scriptures and we have to apply that. Otherwise, there's no other way to understand. Krishna says, Ye yatamam papadyante tamstataiva bhajamyaham mamavat manuvatante manushyapata sarvashaha. To the degree that we surrender to him, he will reciprocate with us. And he also says, Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mamupayanti te. The one who worships him, one who, how does it go? The one who is constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which he can come to me. He doesn't say, if you read a book, you will come to me. He doesn't say if you're a scientist and extremely educated and you studied a PhD in physics at Oxford University, then you'll be able to understand me. He doesn't say if you're very pure, dedicated to your country, Brahmana, renounced like Gandhi, then you will understand me. He says if you're constantly devoted to serving me with love, then you will understand me, because it's Krishna who is giving the understanding. It's Krishna who is personally revealing himself to us. The example is given like a bottle of honey, right? If you want to taste the honey, you don't lick the jar, look at the jar, you know, feel the jar. You have to open the honey and then you can access it. So to access Krishna, to understand Krishna, to realize Krishna, you have to get Krishna's mercy. You have to serve Krishna. And this also goes in degrees. When I first came to the temple, when I first joined the temple in Soho Street, I couldn't really get the deities. I didn't get the altar at all. I think the first time I saw the altar, I didn't even realize there were deities on it. I just like a whole, just a big mixture of flowers and, you know, clothes and ornate, furniture and all of this stuff, so much things on the altar, I didn't really get it at all. And when I joined the temple, going to Mangalarti every day, I was kind of getting used to the deities and getting used to this conception. And so it takes time. It takes purification. It takes service. It takes dedication. It takes us proving to Krishna that I want to understand you before Krishna actually reveals something to us. Otherwise, he's covered by his veils of his internal potency, as he explains in the Bhagavad Gita. So only when we develop that personal relationship with Krishna, only when we develop that love, that priti, then Krishna will slowly, gradually let down the veils of that energy so that we can understand him more and more. I was just made a note when we were reciting the verse here, because for me the best example of Krishna consciousness is Srila Prabhupada. And I've been listening to a lot of morning walks recently while I've been at work. I've just been listening to hours of morning walks. And when you hear Srila Prabhupada talk, then, and when you listen a lot, it's so powerful. You realize that this personality is, he's a prophet, you know. It's like, when you listen to him, I'm from like England, from like a Christian background, you realize that this is like a Jesus kind of person, you know, that's going to change the world. It's going to change the whole of society for thousands of years. He's talking about Krishna, and not just the way he's talking about Krishna, the way he's talking about the material world. You can tell that for him it's like so low class. The whole thing, everybody is a fool and a rascal, you know. Anybody in the material world who's not surrendering to Krishna full time is like disgusting, is a rascal, you know. Because why? Because Prabhupada's not of this material world. Prabhupada has come from such a higher place that when he's coming here and he's describing the truth to us, it's just, you know, this is all, the whole thing is just repulsive unless it's engaged in Krishna service. Or at least the whole mentality of everyone in this world is totally wrong. We need to totally change everything. So Prabhupada's Krishna consciousness is so, so powerful. And that's what we have to follow in the footsteps of. I mean, it's an interesting topic, understanding Krishna. One time I asked Mukunda Dattapuru. Do you know Mukunda Dattapuru? He's a Prabhupada disciple. He's in Vrindavan. He's from America originally. I haven't had any contact with him for a long time, but he's very intelligent, very intellectual. And I asked him in Soho Street, he gave Bhagavatam class then. We're trying to get out of Maya and get out of illusion and understand the truth. But we see the inhabitants of Vrindavan, they don't really know the truth, you know. They're in yoga maya, they're in illusion, thinking that Krishna is just their friend. They don't want to be disturbed in that consciousness, and Krishna doesn't want them to be disturbed. So is there somewhere between us in Maya and between the Brajbasis that people are actually know Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, understand Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead? I said, what about Devaki and Devaki when Krishna appeared? Then he manifested his forearm form. So did they understand Krishna at that point? And from what I remember, he said, you're always going to either be in Mahamaya or Yogamaya. There's not really like a little gap in between where you're like, you know, you like see Krishna. You understand everything. I mean, there's Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita with the universal form. But it's overwhelming. It's overwhelming for him, right? And it's scary. He's scared by that. And he asks Krishna, I don't want to see that anymore. So it's an interesting thing that this whole conception of knowing the truth is not really our goal. Our goal is to develop a relationship with Krishna. Because anyway, how much of it can you understand? Not very much at all. I mean, we definitely want to get out of trouble. And if Krishna, as Prabhupada says here, the material shadow is only a temporary representation from which everyone with proper knowledge must be detached. So we want to get out of Maya. But how much can you really understand about Krishna? And really, that's not the goal. The goal is to love Krishna. And the goal is to serve Krishna and be absorbed in Krishna and be with Krishna. Just like Prabhupada was saying in one of these morning walks, he was saying that if I just presented to you theoretically that there's a place where you just dance and you eat and you're always happy, then would you be attracted to that? You know, would you think that's a good option? And just the way Prabhupada was saying it was like, you know, he knows that place. Srila Prabhupada knows that place, and that's how he can give it to us. It's not that Srila Prabhupada knows everything in the universe, or he's understanding every potency of Krishna. That's not actually the goal. And the reason Prabhupada can give us Krishna consciousness is because he knows Krishna personally. Like I was listening yesterday to remembrances by Bahulashwar Peru. He's a Prabhupada disciple who's passed away now. He was saying he was with Prabhupada once. He was massaging Prabhupada. He was bathing Prabhupada. He was fanning Prabhupada. And one time when he was fanning Prabhupada with a peacock fan, I'm translating it from Hungarian in my mind, Pavato Lejeze, then a peacock feather fell out. And Prabhupada picked up this peacock feather and he was stroking it on his face, on his own face. And he was just saying, Govinda, Govinda, Govinda. And Bahulashwar Prabhu said that it was so intimate and it was so personal that he felt uncomfortable being there. He felt like he was intruding. He felt like this was some special, you know, intimate exchange between Prabhupada and his friend, his beloved. So Prabhupada can give us Krishna because he loves Krishna, because he has a relationship with Krishna, and because he's come from Krishna. And that's our goal, is to develop some of that love by following Srila Prabhupada's instructions. Otherwise, how can you understand God? You can never understand God. He's totally achintya. He's totally unlimited. Even he doesn't understand his potencies. So it's only by his being pleased that he reveals himself to us and we can understand a tiny bit, or as much as we need to know, so that we can engage in his service and give him some pleasure. Okay, thank you for your attention with my ramblings. Some of it may have been inaccurate. If there's any comments or questions or corrections, realizations, then over to you. Yes, Prabhu?
Just one quick question. So Krishna left a body behind after his disappearance to confuse people. But when Lord Chaitanya left, he didn't leave. So any specific reason for doing this in one means in Krishna Leela and not in Chaitanya Leela?
It's a different... Lord Chaitanya is in a totally different mood, isn't he? He's not in the mood of the Purusha, the enjoyer. He's in the mood of a devotee. He's not trying to confuse us. Not that Krishna is trying to confuse us. It's just naturally Krishna's nature can be confusing. Lord Chaitanya is keeping it very simple. He's acting as a sannyasi. He's accepting a spiritual master. I've heard that he merged into the body of Tota Gopinath, although I don't know if like that's 100% totally confirmed, that's totally authorized, but that's what I've heard. He's making it clear, you know, this is how you serve Krishna. So when it says in Chaitanya Charitamrita in the fourth chapter of the Adi Leela that after Krishna had performed his pastimes, he looked down at the material world, is like, oh no, nobody could understand me. I'll have to come again and show them by example what it means to worship Krishna. So Lord Chaitanya is clarifying it for us. He's trying to make things clear and understandable. Is that okay? Anybody else? Any other? Yes, David Puri.
Thank you, Bhu. I was wondering about Lord Brahma in terms of the Vimohan Leela pastime, if he's under the internal potency or the material potency, the Mahamaya or the Yogamaya?
I don't remember hearing that he's under Yogamaya anywhere. Have you heard that anywhere, Govinda Puri, Srinivas Puri? In Brahma, Vimohan Leela, was he under Yogamaya or Mahamaya? Brahma, as far as I've heard, it's Mahamaya, which is misunderstanding. I mean, Arjuna, we understand he was... Krishna arranged that so he could speak the Bhagavad Gita. Indra, we don't hear that that's Yogamaya. We hear that, you know, Indra does a few interesting things now and again. Really? I don't remember hearing it. Maybe we could research it and check it out. But also with Brahma, with Vak, his daughter, that was another instance of him. That's even, well, not heavier, but that's pretty heavy. Becoming sexually attracted to your daughter. That's an example of how careful we have to be in the material world. So he does make mistakes, Lord Brahma. One time, one devotee asked Srila Prabhupada that, you know, if Brahma is making these different mistakes, how can he be the head of our sampradaya if he's not pure? And Prabhupada said he's pure enough. He can do his job, you know, he's like looking after the universe. You know, we all make mistakes sometimes. but he's not an eternal associate of Krishna. He may be a devotee, like our Brahma is a devotee. He's not always a devotee, Lord Brahma. So sometimes Krishna comes and he takes that role if there's nobody else to do it. We hear with Krishna's Nitya Siddha associates, they don't ever make any mistakes, but demigods, it's not the same. It's not the same thing. They can make mistakes. You hear Bhagavatam all the time. They're annoying each other, cursing each other, killing each other, stealing each other's wives. This boy Indra is full of eyes. You know, it used to be a lot worse. He's getting in trouble. Brahma is higher up, but it seems he can also make mistakes. I mean, it's pretty difficult to understand that he forgets who Krishna is. Like I said in the last class, it's like, I mean, you would at least expect him to understand who Krishna is if he's going to be in charge of the universe, right? I mean, it's a good thing to know. Yes, Prabhu?
Just a comment is that you mentioned Mahatma Gandhi as well, and it said that when he was assassinated, that his final words were Jai Shri Ram. So, yeah, just interesting.
That's good, but what was his conception of Jai Shri Ram? Was it some impersonal energy? So he'll definitely get benefited. But Prabhupada, although he was a big fan of Gandhi in the early days, he criticizes him a lot in his morning walks and his conversations. He criticizes him a lot that, you know, what did he know? He didn't know anything about Krishna. The quality of your destination is going to be determined by your cultivation in this life. So if his conception of Ram was that he was in some kind of energy or something, then you're not going to go back to Ram, that's for sure. You may get benefit, you will get benefited, but you're not going to go back to Godhead or anything like that. Yes, Prabhu?
With the Brahma, he became Haridas Thakur, right? Because he prayed to Krishna and then he took birth as Haridas Thakur. So after taking birth as Haridas Thakur, maybe he didn't become Brahma again. He entered the Lord's pastimes.
Yeah.
So there could be another Brahma who took over.
Yeah. He also prayed to become... Did he pray to become again? Uddhava became creepers in Vrindavan, right? Or was it Brahma became grass in Vrindavan so he could get the mercy of the... They were slightly different. Uddhava became creepers in Vrindavan, right? And Brahma became grass or something. Well, Uddhava's in that form in next to Kusum Sarovara, there's a particular place, yeah. You can tell that's the blade of grass, yeah. It's right there. There is a particular place where he's supposed to be there. And there's a pastime where he manifested from that when the queens of Dwarka went there and he recited Srimad Bhagavatam to them. So, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's much better. I'd much rather be Haridas Thakur than Lord Brahma. Lord Chaitanya was dancing with his body after he passed away, yeah. And it's a jiva, so that jiva who performed that pastime, then he became Haridas Thakur, and then after that, then yeah, that's much, much more auspicious. Yes, Mataji? Do you want to take the mic?
Hare Krishna, thank you for the lesson. Krishna show us that one thinks does not exclude the other. You can be centered and spiritually connected by expressing joy and love. Detachment from matter is important precisely to protect our light and our spiritual nature. No? However, we are not Krishna. And how can we learn to remain balanced without falling into excess?
Balance between what?
No excess of external and excess in close vision.
Yeah, I mean, when we talk about balance, then we also, like, you can say, oh, we need to be balanced, right? Some people say, oh, I don't want to be excessive. I'm only going to have one hamburger this week. Some people would think that's balanced. You know, I'm not going to eat too much meat, just some meat. So when you're talking about balance, you always, what does it mean? What's the paradigm? What balance between what things? So in the beginning, we just need to get trained up. We need to be with devotees. It's good. You're living in the temple, right? So you're going to the morning program, you're reading Srila Prabhupada's books. We need to get trained up and understand what is Krishna consciousness about, because it changes everything. It changes our whole paradigm. Like some devotees say, oh, you shouldn't be fanatical. My spiritual master says, there's no question of not being fanatical. How would you talk about, you know, the inhabitants of Vrindavan? Oh, don't be fanatical. You know, don't be so Krishna, don't be too Krishna conscious, you know, do your things as well. Where do we stop in our Krishna consciousness? Lord Chaitanya said that I'm not a devotee because I'm still alive, because I can bear this separation from Krishna. Our goal in Krishna consciousness is to fall totally in love with Krishna, to become totally obsessed with Krishna. So we need to learn that, we need to develop that, we need to become immersed in that, and then, you know, then it redefines for us what the balance is. Is that okay? I didn't quite follow the question, but
And I think as you said perhaps a first step is to understand that nothing is ours.
Yeah.
And that everything around us belongs to Krishna, and therefore we must respect his energy and evolute the right behavior.
Then what?
And do right behavior.
Do the right thing, yeah. We should understand that. Yeah, we need to spend time. We spend quality time being here with devotees, learning, asking questions, doing service, then that's the best thing we can do. And then you'll learn all these things. Yeah, Krishna, everything is Krishna's. We're Krishna's humble servants. Yeah, everything will be revealed by Krishna's mercy and time. Okay, thank you for your attention. Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.